afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for May the 6th, 2015. We are gathered for the purpose of public hearing and work session on House Bill 2997 and public hearing and work session on House Bill 2998A. And so I am now opening a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2997, and I would turn to Mr. Bender to give us an introduction.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and Subcommittee members. Please note that in OLIS we have work session recommendations uploaded for both of these bills for your information. Both of these bills, House Bill 2997 and 2998, provide funding to support the harvesting of western juniper and the manufacturing of products from western juniper. Both of these bills come to you from the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources, and they, well, since you only opened up the work session public hearing on House Bill 2997, let me focus on that one. House Bill 2997 provides $250,000 of general fund to the Oregon Business Development Department for the purposes of financing cooperative efforts related to harvesting western juniper or manufacturing products from the western juniper. The department may use these funds to provide technical business assistance and to support market development and to promote liaison between harvesters, manufacturers, and wildlife management programs. The bill identifies the National Policy Consensus Center at PSU and community organizations as eligible beneficiaries of the support. The bill has no revenue impact. When you get back to LFO's recommendation after public testimony, we will be recommending that the fund source be changed from general fund to lottery funds, but have no other recommended changes.
Mr. Bender, if you don't mind, I'll ask a preliminary question. Changing the general fund to lottery, what effect does that have on the agency's budget?
The agency, Business Oregon, the legislature funds Business Oregon's business development programs pretty much exclusively with lottery funds. It's not to say that the agency has never been provided general funds to support those activities, but we do typically provide fund those activities with lottery funds, and that is why LFO is recommending that you do that again. Lottery funds are one of the constitutionally authorized uses. I'm sorry, economic development is one of the constitutionally authorized uses of lottery funds, so we do use them for that purpose.
Thank you very much. All right, colleagues, any other questions of Mr. Bender? Representative Nierman.
On that note, so is the Juniper, this whole, both those bills, the Juniper project, is that considered economic development and eligible for lottery funds?
Yes, we do believe that. The second bill that you'll be having up next does also provide some funds to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, and that we are recommending to be retained as general fund. But the portions that do go to OBDD, we are recommending that those be provided through lottery funds.
We have four people on the sign-up sheet, and if anyone is moved by the spirit of testimony, I think there's another sheet out there. And I don't know whether the four want to come up in a panel or individually. We have Joel Fisher, Mr. Audley, Mr. Cruz, and Ms. Hamilton. And I don't know if you have a particular batting order or you want to come up individually. Looks like we're starting with Mr. Fisher. Good afternoon, Mr. Fisher.
Good afternoon, Chair Johnson, Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joel Fisher. On behalf of Oregon Business Association, we are a statewide membership-based association with over 275 members across Oregon, both big and small. We started looking at this concept almost about a year and a half ago. One of our founding members, Tom Kelly, chaired the Western Juniper Utilization Group, which developed this policy that you see before you today, and has done a lot of work, and I believe he's sent a couple letters and turned in some testimony himself. I'm going to just address the, you know, the real basics, and then the experts are going to come talk to you later. Juniper is native to parts of Oregon, but, you know, grows essentially as an invasive species. It has negative impacts on a number of different areas across Oregon. It drinks a lot of water and negatively can affect agriculture. Sage grouse don't like to nest anywhere near it, and so it creates problems for sage grouse, which we are trying to keep from being listed as a threatened species. One of the problems with juniper is that we don't yet have it certified, although we are in the process of doing that at Oregon State University, and this bill would go to help develop some markets around uses that juniper can be used for, things like signposts and even cufflinks. Oregon Business Association, we made one of our primary focuses on having an effect on rural Oregon. The economy in rural Oregon is not pulling through this economic recovery in the same way that Portland is. This is, one of the small things that we can do for a relatively small amount of money that can have some amount of impact, creating some jobs in rural Oregon, and we urge your support.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions? Mr. Fisher, I happened to be digging through an old file and found a letter from Tom Kelly dated April 23rd, 2013, introducing me to the Oregon Solutions Project for the Utilization of Western Juniper, and he says you will find attached a term sheet. And colleagues, I'll make this available to the professional staff so they can put it in OLIS. The investment at that time sought from the state of Oregon was $80,000, specifically from the state of Oregon, from the agency $50,000. The total amount of the project was $262,000, and there were a variety of other funding partners. What is the current status? Because one of the hallmarks of Oregon Solutions is leveraged money. There were other partners, including BLM, NRCS, Meyer Memorial Trust, OCF, Sustainable Northwest. What's the status of the other partners?
Chair Johnson, I would need to defer to some of the other experts.
Okay. Whoever the lifeline is, that's the question, and I'd love to get an answer to it. Any other questions for Mr. Fisher? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Next we call up Mr. Audley.
We thought we'd join you together, if that's okay.
Representative Parrish, as a legislative courtesy, would you are you intending to testify?
Yeah, I'm here to testify, but they can go through.
Let's let you play through. Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs, member of the committee. For the record, Julie Parrish, House District 37, and I think we just have 2997 open right now, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so, well, I actually like both bills, but I'll just speak to one and not have to speak to the other, because it'll be like a buy one, get one free testimony. So I am here in support of 2997 and 2998 when you get there. I always tell people that a win in my district is that somebody else in another district has a job, because then you don't come back to my district and ask for more tax money. So I don't have juniper trees in my district. I live in suburbia, and this is an Oregon issue, though, most certainly. And so I appreciate the funding request that's in here, and I do hope we fund the juniper project. I don't need to go on and on about how this is going to help sage grouse or water tables create jobs. I will say there's two things I do think that are missing from this concept. One is, how do we get some additional capital infrastructure dollars to those who are taking a huge, significant financial risk to do this, because it's not an easy wood to work with. It's hard on equipment. It's a very capital intensive to start milling this wood and try to bring it to market in a marketplace that doesn't exist. I think these folks are doing a service to Oregon when you think about the environmental impact of thinning out this juniper, reducing fire hazard, fixing the sage grouse and the water table, all the things that we know are good from this. So I think a capital infrastructure, some type of mechanism to help those who are trying to jumpstart this industry, I think is missing from here. The other piece is the market side products. How do you use these products? So an investment into the agriculture extension, I think, is missing. We had another bill that didn't move forward that had some of that element in there, and I think that that's critical. If you've ever had an opportunity to go to the Food Innovation Center in Portland, we know that there's also sort of this wood innovation that's happening at Oregon State University, and I think a specific investment into them to do some of this juniper work is really important. But otherwise, albeit missing those two things, the concepts are really important to Oregon. And if somebody in Malheur County or Harney County is working, that's great for those of us in Clackamas County and Tualatin and Westland area, because you know, when people have jobs and when they are paying taxes and when they are not on social services, we have money for the things that we need. And certainly the economic impact of a job in Eastern Oregon is significantly different than one up in the Portland metro area for what the residual economic impact in that community actually looks like in terms of somebody with a job who's then eating at your restaurant or shopping in your store and whose kids are going to school. And for certainly all the public services we care about. So I'm just here to support today. Get that all on the record. I'll take questions if you want them, but otherwise I'm happy to get you on with your day.
Colleagues, questions for Representative Parrish? Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for allowing me. I appreciate it.
Okay. We'll try again. Mr. Audley.
I thought we'd join you
and,
as a team.
And okay. Colleagues.
And colleagues.
Madam Co-Chair, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, my name is John Audley. I'm the president of Sustainable Northwest. For 20 years, we worked in Oregon's rural communities, basically mending fences so folks can go back to work, reestablishing that balance between a healthy rural community and a healthy natural system. I'm here to speak specifically about House Bill 2997. I'm also the board chair of Sustainable Northwest Wood, a small sustainably harvested lumber yard that we own and operate out of Portland. Over the past 6 or 7 years, we've purchased roughly $6 million of wood products from small businesses throughout the state and the Pacific Northwest, and that'll be relevant to Juniper in just a second. In many respects, I'm here on behalf of the 50 different members of the Western Juniper Alliance. I've got to say, we at Sustainable Northwest spend a lot of time in collaborative processes, and as my colleagues have heard me say before, I've never seen a bunch of higher functioning folks who get together, decide what needs to be done, get it done, and move on in pursuit of that balance between a healthy high desert and the rural communities that are responsible for harvesting western juniper. Part of the role Sustainable Northwest has played in terms of administering this project is to use the generous support provided by the state as seed money to attract other funds. I think at this stage of the game, we've raised in total, including the $80,000 from the state, about $440,000 in total. We're happy to provide you with a list of the supporters of that.
I would very much like that if you'd get it to the professional staff, they'll distribute
happy
it
to do
the
so.
Committee.
All the Oregon foundations you mentioned, the United States government has been supportive as well. A number of private individuals have been very generous in terms of their support, and as you mentioned a minute ago, Tom Kelly, Neil Kelly Remodeling, and John Shelk of Ochoco Lumber have been very strong supporters of this project. But with that $440,000, we are doing our best to be good stewards of that money and responsible agents of the Western Juniper Alliance. Less than 20% of that is spent on administering the project itself. So we've taken the $80,000, we've added a considerable amount of money to that and spent that money primarily on the ground across the state, both growing the market for juniper wood products and the supply chain so that the supply and demand can come together. I know the market is still small, but it's growing, the lumber yard. 3 years ago, less than 5% of its products were Western Juniper. Today, it's roughly 35%. Last year, the lumberyard sold approximately $600,000 worth of juniper. And as Nancy and others will talk about, there are other projects coming, and we're very excited about the prospects. So we hope that we can continue to provide this support on behalf of this community of very responsible, very hardworking folks. I thank you, and we'll take questions when you're ready.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions? Okay, Mr. Cruz.
Chair Johnson, Chair Gomberg, for the record, my name is Dylan Cruz. I don't have any additional comments to add in addition to what Mr. Oddley said there. I'm just here to answer any additional questions that the committee may have with regards to House Bill 2997 and the details that he previously discussed.
Thank you. Questions? Ms. Hamilton.
Good afternoon. My apologies for my voice. For the record, my name is Nancy Hamilton with Nancy Hamilton Consulting. I'm working with Sustainable Northwest and the Western Juniper Alliance to help build markets for Western Juniper as it's being harvested from Eastern and Central Oregon. Co-chairs Johnson and Gomberg, thank you for having me today. I want to talk to you a little bit about what we've been doing in the last year, year and a half. We've been very busy. We've continued traveling around the state, talking with folks who are harvesting, milling, and reselling Western Juniper to learn what they need and want from us on their behalf. Oftentimes, we've found that programs are put in place that don't actually respond to the needs of the folks who are out there toiling against this work. And so we've done that, I think, a great deal of due diligence on that. We've identified end users of Western Juniper that run the gamut from Tom and Kim Story in Prineville, who are making cabinets, jewelry boxes, and growler boxes, to the Bend Distillery, who uses Oregon Juniper berries for its gin, to the lead architect.
Can we stop there?
Yes.
I think the only way to convince this committee to perhaps vote with these bills is to find out if you brought any samples.
Oh, I will have them brought to you, I promise, Co-Chair Johnson. Alan Patrick has been a great supporter of this work. We've also been working with the lead architect for Panera Bread Cafes. They're headquartered out of St. Louis. They're big on using locally sourced materials when they build their cafes in each of the markets they're growing in. And it's been exciting to watch them be the first commercial application of juniper siding on their cafe that's out by the Portland Airport. We've identified folks in the Portland makerspace who are experimenting with Western Juniper and some high-end value-added products. Revolution Design House and Plywork among them. Plywork, as a matter of fact, just launched a crowdfunding campaign this spring for their Vinny series of products, all of which are made from Western Juniper. In the last several months, we've also been working with businesses such as Trinity Mountain Products in Northern California, who designs produce bins for high-end market chains such as Whole Foods. Those discussions are continuing, and they're working closely with us to leverage the story of Western Juniper. And, excuse me, we even have our very first export of Western Juniper internationally. Kendall Derby in Fossil, Oregon, within the sticks, sent juniper 2x2s to a barrel maker in Sweden who's using them to make gin barrels. They're gorgeous, and they've gone over extraordinarily well. It's just a really exciting moment in our juniper world. We're now talking with the export managers at Business Oregon to identify possible opportunities in Canada, Mexico, and Japan. We're proud and honored to have the short version of our overview video premiere at the Oregon Business Summit back in January, and the response to that has been extraordinary. The greatest use, however, of Western Juniper continues to be as a durable, rot-resistant wood species for agricultural and landscape purposes. We're spending considerable time this year speaking to a wide variety of organizations and businesses that represent this core market opportunity. Our continued goals this year are to focus on education, outreach, and awareness of Western Juniper and its unique story. Foundational to that, we officially launched the Western Juniper Alliance, transforming it from its original utilization group with Oregon Solutions, and we've developed a website that provides information about this fledgling industry. We've attended a handful of trade shows this spring and are seeking a more substantial presence at them next year, events including the Organicology Conference, Oregon Wine Symposium, the Far West Conference, Portland Home and Garden Fair, etc. On another front, we just completed a video that we were hoping to have a chance to show you today, but I will make sure that you all receive the link to it. It highlights our demonstration project with A to Z Wine Works. For those of you not familiar with them, A to Z is the largest wine producer in Oregon. They include several different vineyards. At their Rex Hill Vineyard, they've established juniper poles at the end of their trellis systems to demonstrate the durability of this product as you go to replace treated wood with an organic wood as you become a biodynamic and organic grower, which Rex Hill is. Sam Tannehill, the co-founder of A to Z, has been a great partner with us. We're now leveraging that demonstration site for tours, field trips for people in the business of growing grapes. As a matter of fact, I spoke with Tom Kelly yesterday who said, when can I show this to my folks I know in the winery business? We've got to get more juniper posts out in our Willamette Valley. We're hoping these efforts also extend to a partnership with Umpqua Community College and its well-respected viticulture program. Next month, we're going to launch an online awareness campaign to the wine and vineyard community using this video as our centerpiece. The video, by the way, cost $1,500 to produce, so we're doing all of these things at very, very low cost. Finally, we've just launched an earned media campaign with an eye to both regional publications as well as national trade pubs. All these efforts together give us an opportunity to tell a story to a broader set of folks and continue to gain awareness for Western Juniper. It'd be an understatement to say we're excited about the prospects for Western Juniper, given the hard work of the harvesters and millers working with it every day and with the great support we've received thus far from the state legislature. Both House Bills 2997 and 98 together provide this fledgling industry with the continued support it needs to keep up the work underway, which will collectively help restore the balance in our high desert ecosystem and continue providing more jobs in Oregon, where high unemployment continues to threaten our state's long-term economic vitality. And I can offer some additional comments on 2998 at that time. I'm happy to take questions. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Colleagues, questions? Yes. Senator Hansel.
It just struck me as that maybe we got a conundrum here or something. Initially, we had what basically could be called a noxious weed that was doing all this environmental destruction. And part of the incentive was to create a market as we harvested it. But if we create a worldwide market, which I'm all in favor of, are we going to reach a point where this has become so useful that we need to start to replant it or becomes a cash crop for us?
That's an excellent question. Thank you, Senator Hansel. I'll take a shot at that, and my colleagues can add on. We are currently utilizing approximately 5,000 to 7,000 acres a year. Some of the juniper is so small, it's being harvested, but it can't be utilized. Some of the juniper is old growth, and we don't want to touch that. That's the stuff we want to keep out there. We currently have 6 to 9 million acres of juniper in central and eastern Oregon, so we are a far, far cry from finding a time that we might need to replant. If that's our biggest problem, I think we've done a job well. Thank you for the question, because people do wonder about that sometimes. We still need to be harvesting quite a lot more.
Representative Nierman.
Do any of you know, is there a byproduct to the milling process, and does that byproduct have any economic value, and what is that?
It's a great question. I could go on for hours. I've become a total Western juniper geek. But effectively, you have your heartwood and your small diameter lumber, and that's the core product that is always going to be the bread and butter of Western juniper, in our opinion. You then have jacket boards, the stuff that's sliced off the sides as you create that dimensional lumber. We are looking at growing the market for firewood on that front, as well as additional biomass opportunities. And that's where we really think there's an extraordinary opportunity down the road. There are two or three organizations currently prototyping the equivalent of like a Duraflame log, but uses no paraffin wax and is made entirely out of juniper. And our hope is that we'll be able to go to a manufacturing process in Oregon. We're trying to get them here. They're not here currently. And we'll be putting more people back to work and using what is currently sort of the waste from juniper. The margins are very low on this product. And so it's critical for us to find a way to provide a market for every nook and cranny of this wood, which is currently not happening. It's part of the work that we're going to be doing over the next 2 years. It's a big deal. I appreciate the question. Thank you for asking.
If I may just add, co-chairs and Representative Nierman, just as we think of wood fiber and all of its various uses up and down the supply chain, we have to think of Western juniper in the same context, because sustainable harvest is important. If we ever have the problem of, oh my gosh, we have such a market, what are we going to do? That'll be great. In the meantime, we've got to create as many markets as possible. We'll seek the high end, the high value as best we can. We'll plumb those waters where we know the market and the product fit well. And we will continue to look for good energy applications, because Western Juniper has a lot of BTU in it, and trying to figure out how to use it intelligently will just create another market.
Early on, when I was talking to Tom Kelly about this, he led me to believe that the Western Juniper Project would come to a point of self-sufficiency. And so my question for you on the record is, do you have business plans that will yield sustainability in this market segment without continuing to come back to the legislature for future infusions of cash?
Chair Johnson, that's a great question, and one that we at Sustainable Northwest wrestle with all the time. When Tom and my predecessor, Martin, anticipated that it would only take a biennium to create this market and leave it healthy on its own, I think we now realize we were premature. As Representative Parrish talked about just a second ago, while Nancy's working hard to create markets, we've got to make sure that supply side is as healthy as the demand side, and that is a big portion of our work today. I want to be able to say that in that next biennium, we're here to report a successfully completed project, and Dylan has gone on to other great things for on behalf of Sustainable Northwest. It is our plan at Sustainable Northwest that during this biennium that our role starts to phase out, and we see a viable small industry that's capable of managing or administering this project on its own.
Colleagues, apropos other elements in our budget, history differs on whether or not some of the industry initiatives that had promised that they would achieve takeoff velocity and fly away from state support, they're like having 40-year-old children still living in your basement. They just don't leave.
That would be bad.
And I just would like to...
Fences, the only, I think the only member not yet 40. Only got a couple months left.
But. He'll be moving out soon.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
The point of the story is the 17-19 budget is going to be enormously stressed, and so it would be... only my guidance that you figure out how not to come back.
We will take your guidance very seriously, sir. Thank you.
Representative Reed?
I agree with that. Good guidance.
Okay. Anything else for this panel? Anybody else moved by the spirit of testimony on House Bill 2997? Come forward, Mr. Kluding. Thank you, panel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can't figure out how to make enough money to fix the PERS problem?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Gomberg, for the record, Bill Kluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. I had something in mind to say, but Senator Johnson, that last question of yours is hard to follow. I can only say that you notice I have my jobs pin on every day. There will be jobs created in rural Oregon. And any place in this state that needs jobs is rural Oregon. Congressman Walden spoke 2 days ago, and he said if the sage grouse is listed, it'll be the spotted owl. What happened to us with the spotted owl is going to happen to over a third of this state. Oregon can't afford to lose any more of this state. Money It will take money. This isn't a cash crop, for sure. They're learning how. They're putting the market together. It needs to be done. Hopefully the funding can come forward. And maybe I shouldn't even go this direction, but look what we spent on windmills and solar panels. Some of that did create jobs. I can point to an ethanol facility and within 7 months, the money was gone, the business was gone, the jobs were gone. But I urge this committee to take a long, long look at this. And hopefully the funding can come, because this is going to be a labor-intensive job. There's no roads. You got to have the equipment that can travel over the land and not build a road. I can go on and on, but I urge this committee to take a long, long look, and this help this industry get on the ground and stay on top. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Kluding? Mr. Kluding, looking in your crystal ball, do you see that any of the existing mill infrastructure could be repurposed to accommodate the manufacture of juniper?
Senator Johnson, that's a good question. These mills have been idle to the point that in order to put one back and running perfect, you could bring in these smaller pre-built mills and set them up and be sawing by the time you even figured out how to get a mill that's been down for 5, 10, 20, 25 years back online.
Sadly, you're probably right. Thank you, Bill. Okay. One more spirit of testimony.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Kluding.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Evo Trummer with the Oregon Business Development Department of Business Oregon for short. I just wanted, since the Monday we are tasked with implementing this Bill 2997, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the intent. The department has been working with Sustainable Northwest over the last couple of years to fund parts of the efforts, and Sustainable Northwest has been a wonderful, great partner, and this is great, important work. The bill, as is currently written, spells out that we would fund cooperative efforts by the National Policy Consensus Center, Portland State, and community organizations. We would probably envision having to go out with an RFP to identify the correct or the appropriate entity to execute this kind of work. We would certainly draw on the valuable conclusions and our experience working with Sustainable Northwest, who would likely be a very appropriate partner to do this work. But as it's written right now, we see this as a competitive RFP.
Thank you for that valuable piece of information. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Trummer? Thank you. All right, last call. Seeing none, we will close the public testimony on House Bill 2997 and open a work session. Mr. Bender, you want to give us any comments before we begin?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends amending the bill to change the fund source from general fund to lottery funds. The activities funded in this bill do qualify for lottery funds support, and doing this change would conform the funding for this program with the fund source for other OBDD programs. We have distributed copies of the HB 2997-1 amendments. These amendments replace the source of funds with lottery funds. They make no other changes to the bill. LFO recommends a one biennium budget support of $250,000 lottery funds to OBDD, and that House Bill 2997 be amended by the -1 amendments.
Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Bender?
Madam.
Senator Monroe.
I believe
40 years ago or whenever, approximately 40 years ago when the voters
you weren't born.
Approved the lottery. The original intent was that all of the lottery proceeds go to economic development. It's been modified somewhat since then, but that was the original intent of the lottery, and I think this amendment suggested by Mr. Bender follows that intent.
Thank you. Colleagues, any other comments? Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move adoption of the -1 amendments to House Bill 2997.
Colleagues, you have heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Are there any questions, any discussion, any objection? The -1s are amended into House Bill 2997. Representative Gomberg.
Madam Co-Chair, I move House Bill 2997 as amended to the full committee with a do pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you have heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. We need carriers. Mr. Hansel?
Well, Ms. Reed and I are the two co-sponsors of this. Maybe we could each one take one.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to defer to Senator Hansel in the full committee and happy to take on the task in the House floor.
All right. Senator Hansel will take it to full and to the Senate, and Representative Reed will take it to the House. All right. So we will now close the work session on House Bill 2997 and open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2998A relating to Western Juniper. Mr. Bender.
Subcommittee members, House Bill 2998 is also relating to Western Juniper and also comes to you from the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. This bill also provides funding to promote harvesting and the manufacturing of Western Juniper wood products. The bill appropriates $800,000 of general fund to the Oregon Business Development Department and $100,000 of general fund to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission for these purposes. The bill designates these funds for the following uses. Of the monies appropriated to OBDD, $500,000 is designated for economic development assistance, business loans, and grants. So this would be a loan program of grants, loans, and forgivable loans for businesses operating in these areas. An additional $200,000 is to provide technical assistance to these businesses. And $100,000 is for workforce training. The $100,000 in the bill for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission is to finance mapping of marketable Western Juniper strands at the Institute for Natural Resources at Portland State University. We also have amendments that we are recommending to this bill to change the funding source.
Thank you. Colleagues, again, we have four people signed up to testify, and I have a question for Mr. Trummer, so I'm going to add him to the list. Let's take them in the order that they've signed up, and if you guys want to come up in a panel, if you gentlemen and ladies would like to come up in a panel, Joel Fisher, OBA, Mr. Audley, Sustainable Northwest, Mr. Cruz, and Ms. Hamilton, if you have things that you want to add to this bill. Okay, I don't care what order you self-select.
Why don't I start, because I'm just going to say to the co-chairs and the members of the committee, John Audley, for the records, President of Sustainable Northwest. I did want to thank all the sponsors of the bill. Your response to both of these bills has been amazing, and I can't thank you enough. And now I'm going to defer to people a whole lot smarter and provide moral support. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Again, Nancy Hamilton for the record with Nancy Hamilton Consulting. I have a contract with Sustainable Northwest on behalf of the Western Juniper Alliance efforts. I had some prepared remarks, but I'm not going to read them. I think the thing that's been most interesting to me. As many of you know, I work for Governor Kulongoski and served as his senior policy advisor for economic development. Chair Johnson served on the Oregon Business Oregon Commission at the time, and I had the great pleasure and honor of working with her on some of these efforts. Rural Oregon is difficult to create new opportunities in, and I watched many opportunities that were well-intended come and go. And having been involved now with the Western Juniper Alliance for over a year, I've seen these. We have core harvesters and millers in Hines in Harney County, in Powell Butte, and up in Fossil in Wheeler County. And we then have loggers who are providing these logs. We have truckers who are trucking these logs. We have resellers like the folks at Sustainable Northwest Wood and Coast Lumber and Par Lumber who are then reselling it. We have landscapers and designers who are using this wood. The multiplier effect for employment has been just a great, an extraordinary, really, and unusual in my experience, story. And the folks who are out in eastern and central Oregon milling this wood aren't going anywhere. They're not going to be gone in a year. They're not starting a new idea and then, you know, using the money and taking off. These folks have been toiling in this world for decades. They're deeply committed to the sustainable harvesting and milling of this wood. And they lack the business acumen that some of our folks here on the west side of the state have. They desperately need business support. They need capitalization to grow their mills, to build their demand. As we start to build these markets, their equipment simply isn't going to be able to keep up. They've barely been able to pay family wages. They're looking at taking seasonal workers to full-time workers. They're going from 4 people to 8 people in Harney County and Wheeler County. That's a big deal. You have 1 person per mile in Wheeler County. And so the opportunity to provide these dollars for them is going to have a significant impact on the economic vitality of these communities. And unlike John Audley, I would not be surprised if we came back and asked for additional assistance in the next biennium, because I've seen rural community efforts come and go, and this one really is growing. If we don't continue to get more private money and foundation money and business money elsewhere and federal money, then yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But this takes time. These guys need our help, and it's just been a real highlight of my professional career to be part of this, and these dollars that are outlined here are helping to create these this momentum, and we see something moving forward that has been sort of staggering along for a long time. So that's what these dollars are for, and I hope we have your support on this front. Thanks for your time.
Representative Whitsitt.
I was wondering if Sustainable Northwest will receive any of the lottery dollars that we are allocating here for this project or these projects.
Representative Whitsitt, Chair Johnson, Chair Gomberg, for the record, my name is Dylan Cruz. I'm the Policy Director at Sustainable Northwest. Of the dollars outlined in House Bill 2998, Sustainable Northwest would not receive those dollars unless we were bidding on it through the competitive process that was made available through Business Oregon. So if someone on staff or someone we were working with were to bid on that, that would be an option. Same with House Bill 2997. As Mr. Tremmer outlined previously, they anticipate an RFP competitive process for that as well. Sustainable Northwest would apply for that, as we have been the coordinator of the Western Juniper Alliance for the last 2 years, but it would be through the competitive process that was outlined.
Fellow?
Could you describe the competitive process?
Representative Whitsitt, Chair Johnson, Chair Gomberg, I'd have to defer to Business Oregon about the criteria that they would use in that competitive process and what the rollout of that RFP would look like.
We'll have them up, Representative Whitsitt. We'll have Business Oregon come up. Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm interested in the process by which the juniper is harvested. How much does that resemble the traditional, whatever, just Douglas fir harvesting? You're wagging your head. Can you just talk about that a little bit, just high level?
It doesn't resemble it much at all. I don't know if Dylan wants to take the lead to describe it, but it's stewardship contracts, mostly with the federal government, with BLM, some with the state, and some with private landowners. And they go in and harvest the juniper so that we can reestablish the high desert habitat. And so it's not at all like a fir or pine or any of the more traditional lumber timber operations that you might think of. And Dylan, maybe you can be a bit more.
Representative Nierman, beyond what Ms. Hamilton outlined, beyond the economics of the projects and the intent of why juniper is harvested, the actual mechanics of removing it and then breaking it down into a product are different. What you might have with a Douglas fir, with a pine, you go through a debarking process, obviously, to get to that saw log and move that. Most of those juniper timbers that we are working with are not large enough to be saw logs to begin with, but for the 10 to 15% that we are using for a higher value, do go through a process where they are significantly stripped and broken down to that heartwood that we talked about. The durability and the value of juniper is within that heartwood. That is what makes it rot resistant. That is what lasts. And if you've seen juniper, you know that they have that clover type shape. They bend, they twist. We have to remove a lot of that exterior layer in order to get down to something that is most useful, that is straight and can be used for the cants, for the posts, for the landscaping timbers that we generally use juniper for. So a lot of the material is cut down to get to a final end product, which gets back to your original question about finding markets for the residuals of that. That's why it's critical to look at firewood, to look at biofuels, to begin to use a lot more of those jacket boards and residuals that are left over.
If I may add, to just share a quick story, John Shelk, a man who spent most of his life sawing pine logs for a living, has deeply invested in this project and is helping directly one of our millers, a guy close to where John and Linda live. He thought, in his way, I don't know if you know him well, but he thought he could take kind of the experience of higher volume, faster sawing technologies into the juniper world. And he smiled in his way and said, I've never learned more in my life from spending time with this young man who saws these logs one at a time. It's just different. It'll always be a niche. It should be in many respects. I don't think we'll ever see the warehouses of the world cutting, and they shouldn't cut juniper. It'll be our friends on the ground on the east side who figure out a way to make a living with the heartwood and everything else that we can get out of a sustainable harvest.
Thank you.
Mr. Utley, is there, I drive by a myrtlewood shop coming into Salem, and you see them on the coast all the time making beautiful decorative things. I'm wondering, is there a decorative market with juniper, bowls, platters, the kinds of things that you traditionally see associated with the craft manufacture of myrtlewood?
Co-Chair Johnson, there is. I think the best example, if you go over to Mother Goose, you'll see some of the story's amazing handicraft there. Right now, they've kind of specialized in jewelry boxes and that kind of higher value than the smaller pieces, but it is so decorative. As Joel showed you his cufflinks, it's such a beautiful wood that I think more and more artisans are discovering it. If I'm not mistaken, that art display at PDX hanging on the wall is juniper, is it not?
No, there is, however, a large art
installation. You identify.
I'm sorry, Nancy Hamilton with Nancy Hamilton Consulting. There is a large art exhibition piece at the Central Oregon Community College in the new science building, and it was a $60,000 commissioned piece of art that sits up along the banister there. It's extraordinary. As Mr. Audley mentioned, Tom and Kim Story in Prineville make not only a significant number of decorative pieces in the growler boxes and the jewelry boxes, but they also are a fine cabinet maker. Tom Kelly with Neil Kelly Cabinets is also using them more and more often in kitchen cabinetry. In a conversation I just had this week with Mr. Kelly, he noted that they're now using juniper siding on some high-end custom homes that are being constructed in the Tetherow construction plan out in the Bend area. And I'm proud to say I used Western Juniper siding, paid full freight for it, on my small house I've been renovating in North Portland for the last several months, as well as juniper decking. And so there are several different opportunities to use it. The scale we need to get to is going to require all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Hamilton, I have a question for you. You know from our past personal association what a supporter I am of Oregon Solutions and rural regional solutions. And I have noticed at least what I perceive to be the pernicious effect of inducing money into that process and the chilling effect that it has had on entrepreneurism and on-the-ground hustle. It begins morphing into an entitlement. And I'm going to ask Mr. Bender to put on the record whether or not this grant is, or this appropriation from the legislature is one-time funding. But I'd like you to comment on or elaborate on your comments about we're going to be back.
I didn't say we were definitely going to be back, but I do think that if we were back, it would be because we've had continued significant forward movement and we need more help. That said, Chair Johnson, the folks that these dollars are intended for are, I'm trying to think of the right word, they're ferociously independent. They don't want government help. They don't want support and to become an entitlement organization that is out there feeding off of government money. It's taken time to have a conversation with them to say, what do you need to grow your business, and can we be helpful? And so this $29.98 I do see as more of a one-time allocation. These guys need to step up. They can't get traditional loans from banks. They can't, they're going to pay these dollars back if it's the last thing they do before they die. They just don't take charity. They don't take things for free. These are hardworking men who want to grow. And so I think the sort of the personality of this project is not going to lend itself to long-term capital forgivable loan programs. I'm thinking more of the 2997, where if there's a need for them to continue to get folks to help them navigate this work, there might be a need for that.
If I may illustrate.
Would you identify yourself?
John Audley, Sustainable Northwest. Thank you, Co-Chair. At Sustainable Northwest Wood, the selling season for juniper is basically the summer. At this stage of the game, none of our milling friends could join us because they're too busy cutting wood to fill orders, both for our own lumberyard but their own customers. It would be great if they could access capital so that they could mill during the off-season, so they could buy a big enough log deck and saw through the winter, keeping their employees full-time employed. Not seasonally employed, and then more easily meet the demands of the explosive summer market as opposed to peddling so hard that they've got to work 24 hours a day to meet that. Right now, we can't figure out a way to set up those lines of credit so these guys can access that, call it a revolving fund, and make this a 365 days a year small business operation. These are the challenges that our supply side friends face I think once they establish the credibility of their small businesses, then they'll be able to go get their own lines of credit. They won't need this kind of technical assistance, and we can back up because they are functioning in that fashion. That's just an example of one of the challenges that we're wrestling with trying to figure out, so that these folks can work all year long and continue to grow their businesses.
Chair Johnson, if I may just elaborate, Dylan Cruz with Sustainable Northwest, to your points about entrepreneurship and the size of this package, one point that I do want to make out for House Bill 2998 and the $500,000 that is specifically set aside for working capital, and Mr. Tremor might elaborate on this more, but it creates a tiered process by which that assistance is provided, and they start with loans. And it could be a low-interest loan, but they start with loans. Then they go down next, and they say, all right, maybe we do a forgivable loan based upon certain performance criteria like employment. The third stage in that is if they would provide a grant, and that would only be under circumstances, as the language outlines, if it would create undue harm or burden to that business. The other point is that it's $500,000.
As defined by whom?
It would be by Business Oregon.
Okay.
Also, the $500,000 there, we know that the demand out in the field significantly exceeds the $500,000 that is being requested there. There's multiple businesses. There's a single business we know that could use that entire package. And so the intent of this was to bring in additional private resources to create those public-private partnerships and make sure that those businesses, if they are receiving some assistance from the state, that this is more leverage, this is a catalyst to help them then go out and secure additional private capital from traditional funding sources. So perhaps they receive $200,000, but then they've got to go out and get $200,000 or $300,000 more. And the final point I'll add for a personal note for me, when we talk about coming back here again, I've told each of you when we've met, I'm a young guy, I'm under 42. If I come back to you again in 2 years and I say I want more funding, you remind me of it and you play a video of this hearing. I don't want to come back. I don't want to ask again. When this bill was originally drafted up, it created an ongoing program within Business Oregon. We got an amendment to make it a one-time biennium request. That's for two reasons. I want to do something else with my life, and two, these guys need to stand on their own. We don't want to make this ongoing. This is not a burden. This is a jump start for the industry, and we're confident it will work. Thank you.
Thank you for your unambiguous statement. I think you were one of the ones on the telephone that told me this was going to be self-supporting as well. So I appreciate your candor and straightforwardness. Let me just ask Ms. Hamilton, you have characterized these as gritty, fledgling entrepreneurs. I'm asking perhaps a rhetorical question. What effect will some of the employment burdens that we're adding to these fledgling businesses out of this legislative session going to have on these startup businessmen and women?
Chair Johnson, thank you for the question. They're not fledgling businesses. These are, for the most part, folks who've been working in these businesses for many, many years. What we're hoping to help them do is expand businesses that have been in place for over a decade and many decades in a couple of cases. I can give you a couple of statistics that I think might help. In Harney County, where Gerard Lebrecht has Joseph's Juniper, and he is the single biggest employer, juniper-related employer of the three, the unemployment rate in Harney County is 7.7%. The labor force there is a total of 3,336 people in the entire county. 2,060 of those are non-farm employment. Many of that 2,060 are publicly employed, either by schools or county or state employment. There are 282 people unemployed in Harney County. One job in Harney County is the equivalent of 125 jobs in Multnomah County. And so if and Gerard Lebrecht has a payroll company who works with him. He pays living wages. He's on the books. He does workers' comp. And so the opportunity for him to grow is not significant. It's not that he'll suddenly not know how to run a business where he's employing people. Each of our three key millers right now is very different from each other. Gerard is really looking to expand. Chris Pettyjohn in Powell Butte is looking to stabilize and develop more markets directly. He had a sole distributor that he worked with, and now he's looking to work in the open market. He needs business assistance to develop a business plan so that he can market more effectively. Kendall Derby up in Fossil is the only juniper miller in Oregon with a kiln. And so anything that needs to be kiln dried, he's the guy to go to. Anything that's going to be planks or large, beautiful pieces, those really gorgeous pieces of juniper folks think about, you go to Kendall. He needs a business plan. We're working with him right now to put that together. He doesn't have the business acumen that Gerard Lebrecht has. And so one of the things I think we've done very effectively in this work is taken this sort of chunk by chunk. We aren't trying to do a one-size-fits-all for these guys. I don't believe that a warehouser, large mill, sort of, that's been mothballed is going to be a solution for this sort of work. It's very locally focused. It's a niche business, and each of these individuals needs different things. The request in 2998 answers exactly what they're telling us they need. We haven't made this up, and then we're going to go and see if it works. It's completely the other way around.
Co-Chair Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I don't want the question I'm about to ask to suggest that I'm not looking for opportunities to create new jobs in Oregon. Far from it. But in the scenario you just suggested, if we create these new job opportunities, are there qualified applicants to fill those jobs?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Co-Chair Gomberg. Nancy Hamilton, again, one line item in this bill request is for workforce training. And the fact of the matter is, the answer is no, not right now. folks don't know how to show up on time with the skill sets needed to work with heavy machinery that requires skills. We want to work with our community colleges. I've had conversations with Cam Preuss, who is now the president of Blue Mountain Community College, and some other folks in Eastern Oregon to say, how do we take this and not create a big bureaucracy that has to live forever, but stay nimble, stay small, move around the state, and help provide workforce training assistance, whatever it may be, for folks so that they can get back to work and stay at work with family wage jobs. But part of the issue, quite honestly, has been that the folks who aren't working in these rural counties are chronically unemployed, and we need to find ways to get these folks back to work. We feel confident we can do that.
Representative Woodson.
I don't mean to beat a dead horse here, but I am trying to understand the relationship of Sustainable Northwest to you're talking about three mills, and we took testimony of how many people you're looking at, 12 or 17 people working, I mean, coming out of this whole thing. How does Sustainable Northwest, what is this bidding that you're talking about regarding the money? I mean, I'm totally confused.
Co-Chair Johnson Gomberg, Representative Whitsitt, let me give it a whirl. When the Western Juniper Alliance was created, when this group of 50-some state and local governments, federal governments, county folks, and others got together, there was a need to coordinate those activities, prioritize what needed to be done, identify a strategy to grow the supply and a strategy to grow the demand side. We were asked by this community to administer this project, so we happily did so. Our role in that context is to keep these folks focused on and prioritizing making decisions and getting it done. Part of that job then is to be the entity through which the revenues flow. So somebody's got to write a check, somebody's got to issue contracts, somebody's got to report to foundations who've given us money, to the United States government that supports this work as well, to the state of Oregon. So you need an entity that's going to accept those funds and administer those funds in an open and transparent fashion. That's the role that Sustainable Northwest has played so far. We are happy to do so again should the community of stakeholders in the Western Juniper Alliance want us to do that. If they think that they've reached a point where it's time to take that on themselves, that's fine as well. But that's been the role that we've played so far. So we provide staff time. We provide the ability to raise money in addition to the funds that the state of Oregon has so generously given. It's not an easy exercise to go ask five or seven foundations, the United States government, and a handful of individuals for the other $370,000 that we've raised, but we have. And what is important to me as the president is it's really important that that money get on the ground, that it doesn't stay in my shop. And I'm proud of the fact that our overhead is as low as it is, that to pay for Dylan's time and a piece of my time and a little bit of other folks on staff's time, we take just a tiny piece of that total fund, so that in addition to the $80,000 that the state granted last time out, we've almost tripled that amount with other funds from other sources, and all of that money has gone to the work on the ground. Additional monies were then raised to cover the costs of administering this project. Does that help?
I don't understand. You're talking about bidding for the right to do this. What are you talking about? Who are your competitors that you're bidding against for the right to take the money from the state and raise other money and then administer it? What percentage, if you get the bid, are you suggesting Sustainable Northwest will take from that, which is, or any, whoever wins the bid?
Sure. If in many circumstances, for substantial sums of money, the Oregon legislature requires that agencies ask entities to say why they should be the recipients. And under these circumstances, Business Oregon would send out a request for proposals. Anybody, any entity could then say, you know, and in that, and I'm just, I'm this is an informed estimate of what would happen. Business Oregon will say, this is what needs to happen. Someone has to administer these funds. It has to achieve the objectives of the Western Juniper Alliance, as stipulated in these materials. You submit your proposal. The forms are fairly established by the state, so there's lots of areas that you've got to provide very specific information about how much overhead you charge and things of that nature. And we would then submit that for the record and then be judged in comparison to whomever or whatever else might decide that it's better qualified to administer this project. And then it would be the decision of Business Oregon or whoever it delegated that decision to decide who is awarded the contract to administer the funds.
So this may be a question. Is this typical then that we give money to Business Oregon and then they we have another layer of bureaucracy there? Is this typical?
Let's invite Mr. Trumo up, please, if one of you wouldn't mind.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Evo Trumo with the Oregon Business Development Department of Business Oregon. I'm sure it has happened before, yes. We are the recipients of funds that are intended for a specific purpose. You're putting me on the spot. I'll come up with an answer in just a moment here. But I think the ultimate question the legislature might ask itself is, do you want us to create a program to do this, or do you want us to go and work with the people who are already doing this and have an expertise in the field and do it that way?
Follow up. Mm-hmm. I'm understanding it's a very small number of people that we're talking about, three mills, right? And they're single-owner mills, little teeny-tiny mills. Right, that we're talking about?
Representative.
Okay, I guess I'm not understanding why we need another layer of somebody to administer this. This is a fairly small amount of money. Why don't we just do this through Business Oregon?
Now, Madam Chair, Representative, the way House Bill 2998 is written, it actually gives us the money to do that either directly or contract it out. So if you look at Section 2, it creates the a loan or a grant or a forgivable loan program that we would administer. And for that particular one, we would do this in-house as we do many loan or forgivable loan programs in-house already. So we would do this in-house directly. I'd like to add, if I may, just for the record here, because I came here to say that too, in the event that there are multiple or more demand for the 500,000 or more demand than the 500,000 we have available, we would then rank applications probably in alignment with the performance criteria that are laid out in the bill. So job creation, or is sustainable, or can it be paid back? Is it a forgivable loan? Does it have to be a grant? So that's the 500,000, that piece. Going down the line, the 200,000 in technical assistance, we ask that we have the ability to either do it directly or do it through third parties, and trying to figure out what exactly the technical assistance, the nature of that, and what we can do in-house, or where we would need assistance, or where we would refer the mills to a third party. And the last one is the workforce training. Representative, we don't do workforce training, so we would probably do a need assessment and work with community colleges or workforce training institutions to do that kind of workforce training. But we just don't have that expertise.
Could you conceivably contract with SBDCs to help the one mill that needs a business plan, for example?
Oh, certainly, yes.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Woods, there's definitely a difference as well. Dylan Cruz, Sustainable Northwest. The difference between the mechanism for House Bill 2998 right. and 2997 are different.
Right.
House Bill 2998 is focused on specific activities based off of business planning or workforce training or loans, and so those will go to the appropriate entities. As I noted, Sustainable Northwest does not intend to submit applications for those. That is not where our expertise mm-hmm. lies. House Bill 2997 explicitly provides funds for, and it says, the National Policy Consensus Center and community organizations for supply chain development and market development activities. So the marketing work that Ms. Hamilton outlined, that type of work. Now, that money, as you noted, is a small community. If the committee felt appropriate, could directly be allocated to Sustainable Northwest as the coordinator of the Western Juniper Alliance. However, as it is outlined now, Mr. Tremmer detailed a competitive process, and that's about transparency here, and that's about competition. If the committee feels it's appropriate, it should go to Sustainable Northwest directly, as the funds did before. Of course, we're happy to do that and eliminate that bureaucracy and that detailed process, but that's a decision for the committee to make if they wanted to go through that competitive process.
I'd just like to make a statement. I'm concerned this is being sort of sold as a big jobs thing for Eastern Oregon, and that is not what I'm hearing in both the Ag and Natural Resources Committee testimony that I heard, or today. This is a very small thing that will affect a very small number of people. Is that correct? I mean, this is not a big jobs bill for Eastern Oregon. There is no way from the testimony that we're hearing. And I think we need to put that in context. This is some sort of a niche thing for some already existing small mills, three, I believe, in what, two counties or three counties. And we heard it will not come into most of the counties of Eastern Oregon. So, I mean, I think we just need to understand what we're looking at here. This is not a panacea solve it all for Eastern Oregon. This is a small little thing that we're looking at. And I am really worried about adding layers and layers of bureaucracy onto something that's going to provide 24 jobs or 17 jobs or three mill jobs or whatever. So that's all I have to say.
Co-chairs, Representative Whitsitt, I appreciate your concern about spending money wisely and getting the most out of it. I think it's fair to say with 6 or so million acres of high desert to treat, we need a larger infrastructure. We need a larger supply side than presently we know exists. We know of two other people that are trying to get their businesses off the ground. That's still a small industry, let's call it, a community of businesses. I think to achieve both the rural economic objectives associated with timber harvest and production and the conservation objectives that will help keep ranchers ranching in these high desert ecosystems, the jobs will have to grow beyond the businesses that we've discussed. What we can talk with you about now is the community of businesses that we know. But what I also know is that our lumber yard sells juniper to Chicago now, to Seattle, to San Francisco, and to Texas. And I'd like to see them go from 600,000 to 1.5 million in juniper. And the only way they're going to do that is if there's a bigger supply chain providing it and other sellers of Western juniper products. So I'm hopeful it grows beyond what we've described. I respect what you're saying. My fingers are crossed.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Tremmer, I've got a couple of questions for you. Between you and Mr. Cruz's comments, you've somewhat talked about what your performance metrics are going to be for the 500,000 and the 200,000. The workforce training, I think I understand pretty well. That's going to be largely mapping and activities on the ground that will yield a work product of where the trees are that would be available to be cut. But could you comment a little bit on the performance metrics, just so we have it as part of the record, from the agency versus the advocates for the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the question. We would likely look at output of the mill as a performance measure before and after, and FTEs hired or retained as another one. I'm not entirely sure, and I would punt here a little bit, but let me, if we would look at indirect employment, because I'm assuming some of this would be contracted labor out that actually will harvest the trees, but we would probably look at that as well.
Given that this is a relatively niche market, you ought to be able to keep these metrics with great specificity, I would presume.
Yes, and that is always our preference, to have it be very specific.
Colleagues, any other questions? I guess I would just conclude, perhaps because I'm looking at Mr. Cluding in the back of the room, I think that there's something so pathetic about the fact that we're sitting here talking about this de minimis amount of money to grow a nascent industry harvesting weeds when our magnificent forests remain a source of revenue that is beyond our grasp. So having said that, I would be happy to hear from Mr. Bender about any technical adjustments, and then let's move this out. Good idea. Close a public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 2998A. Thank you, Mr. Bender.
Subcommittee members, LFO recommends adoption of the House Bill 2998-A4 amendments. These amendments do two things. The first thing that they do is that they change the source of funds provided to OBDD from general fund to lottery funds. These are for the same purposes and reasons that we mentioned, that I mentioned for House Bill 2997. This is the fund source that we use to fund business development programs in Business Oregon's budget. The other change that the amendments do is that they increase funding for the Oregon Business Development Department by $123,917 to finance the agency's administrative costs associated with the bill. We recommend that you establish establish one half-time limited duration position, 0.50 FTE in OBDD to support agency administrative activities related to the bill. The agency would utilize this position primarily for the grant and loan program that it would be operating under the bill. Again, this would be we're recommending one-time support. What this means, in fact, is that the legislature, of course, would always have the opportunity to provide more funding for a program in the future. However, this would not become part of the agency's current service level budget, and any request for funding would need to come forward in a policy option package or to bills such as this.
Thank you. Questions of Mr. Bender, Representative Whitsitt.
So the $125,000 administration fee is for a total amount of how much being administered money?
The total amount that would be administered by Business Oregon would be $800,000. Primarily, the additional staff would be focusing on the loan and grant program, which is $500,000 of the $800,000.
So for a total of $1.3 million, $125,000?
The $500 is part of the eight.
The $500 is part of the eight?
Yes. So for $800,000.
So they're asking for $125,000 to administer $800,000.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
I'm probably going to be a no.
Mr. Tremmer, would you come forward? Do you have any comment on those metrics? Representative Whitsitt raises a very interesting question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Evo Trauma with the Oregon Business Development Department, of Business Oregon for short. We added a half FTE and then some Attorney General fees because we will incur some of this and some professional service costs there too. And yes, even though there's just a limited amount of loans that will actually go out from this from the fund or the development there, we do need a person to develop the rules, the forms, and all the stuff around it to actually execute this in a way that you look at us and say that we are doing a good job. That's really what it is. We are understaffed as we are.
Thank you.
I'm just going to say I like the program. I'd like to support it. I cannot support $125,000 to administer $800,000.
All right. With that, any other questions or comments? Co-Chair Gomberg, I would entertain motions.
Well, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'd move the LFO recommendations in House Bill 2998-A.
Colleagues, you've heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Are there any questions, any discussion, any objection? Representative Whitsitt marked as you want to be an objection all the way through. Senator, Representative Whitsitt objects. LFO recommendation for House Bill 2998A is approved. Co-Chair Gomberg.
I would move adoption of the -A4 amendments to House Bill 2998-A.
Colleagues, you have heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? Representative Whitsitt is an objection. The dash four A4 amendments are now moved into House Bill 2998A. Co-Chair Gomberg.
And finally, Madam Co-Chair, I would move House Bill 2998-A as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? Representative Whitsitt noted as an objection. House Bill 2998A as amended is moved to the full with a due pass recommendation. And I think it would probably.
May I say a suggestion real quick on the carrier? What I meant to, what I was trying to communicate to Mr. Representative Reed is that if he took one and I would take the other, I meant 998 or 997. I would suggest maybe he could carry it. That's my suggestion.
Okay, well, to full, then we'll switch them around. Whoever was to full.
Both of these go to full.
I know, but you want Representative Reed to carry one and you carry one to full.
I was doing 2297. I would suggest that Mr. Reed do 2998.
That's fine, and we'll stick with Senator Hansel on the Senate floor and Representative Reed on the House floor. Okay, colleagues, any other questions? Anything for the good of the order, Mr. Bender?
No, just to remind subcommittee members that you have two agency work sessions coming up. Employment Department is scheduled for tomorrow, and DCBS is scheduled for next Monday. These materials, you will find materials in OLIS for these.
Okay, thank you. Colleagues, anything for the good of the order? There being none, we're adjourned. There are those. Back to you. Mm-hmm. Back to you. Mm-hmm. We're adjourned. There are those.